From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill and I'm joined by my co-host Sarah Lamerson. Sarah, how was your weekend? We're getting close to St. Paddy's Day. Did you go do anything related to being green?
No, but it's starting to get a little greener here in Nashville, although we did have some snow last night. But I got
really?
We're getting hit a little bit by the nor'easter that's happening up in the northeast. So, but I got a couple rounds or a couple holes of disc golf in up in Bowling Green, Kentucky before the cold weather hit. So it was pretty fun.
Very cool. Yeah.
What about you? I heard you had a pretty rocking weekend.
Oh, I did. I was actually back in Las Vegas. Just can't get enough Vegas apparently this time of year. Yeah, I went there for 311 Day, the band 311. Every couple years on March 11th, they celebrate it like as their holiday with all their fans and stuff. And so they did two nights in a row of like 3 hours each night. It was pretty phenomenal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, also got some disc golf in. Went to the North Las Vegas Disc Golf Park. It was a little, there's like 9 tee pads, but 18 baskets on a little municipal par 3 golf course.
Cool.
Yeah, it was nice. And we actually ran into some other disc golfers there who were in town for the show and stuff. So it was cool. It was a nice little full circle weekend, and there were really good tacos down the street. So on the whole, not a bad weekend at all.
Sounds pretty good. Yeah. You sound pretty tired though.
No, I'm ready. I'm ready for this week. We got a lot coming up this week. It was kind of nice to have a week off, but we're kind of kicking back into gear this week. We're going to have the Waco Annual Charity Open, the second event on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But first, we got to kind of run down a couple of the events over the weekend that we talked about last week. The first one, St. Patrick's Day Classic up in Orangevale, California, Sacramento area. Speaking of St. Patrick's Day, we made some picks last week, and I don't know who ended up winning that one, Sarah.
Let's see.
It was my pick.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
It was my pick.
I was thinking overall, but we'll do that a little bit later.
Oh,
yes.
No.
Your pick.
I was just.
You're totally just rubbing it in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So no.
Pick won. I'll say it.
Ended up being a really good tournament. James Proctor ended up winning by one shot over Tyler Grady and Lewis Bittney. He had a 3-day total of 191, took home $1,200 for an A tier, which I was pretty impressed with that payout.
Yeah, it's a nice payday.
Yeah. And then over on the women's side, Lisa Fakus ended up taking the win. She was 4 under for the weekend, took home $675. Jessica Weiss came in second, Leslie Todd in third, Nicole Bradley in fourth, and Melody Weibel in fifth. Now, Sarah, I know you were kind of paying attention as the scores rolled in and everything. What really popped out to you from this event over the weekend?
So the top three women's scores were well over their ratings on average. So Lisa, Jessica, and Leslie. But where Lisa really took the advantage was on round one. She shot a 988.
Wow.
Which is pretty fantastic. And she just kind of held on to it from there and stayed consistent and was able to win 5 strokes over Jessica. So.
Yeah, and that's a full 48 points above her rating, above her player rating.
Wow. Yeah, she's killing it.
She's, I mean, her start to the season, I don't know if she could have asked for a better start to the season right now.
Yeah, she's definitely starting off strong.
Really, really shows the, you know, the commitment that she's put in over the last offseason and everything. It's nice to have another solid contender week in and week out on the women's side. It kind of mixes things up a little bit so that we're not just talking about the same like 3 or 4 people all the time.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm excited to see her play when we play some of the same events on the east side of the country. So
yeah. And then she gets go home to Texas this weekend, so a little homecoming, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let's go back on the men's side. Biggest thing, James Proctor, big second round, shot a 1051. That's up pretty well over his 1019 rating. Actually, his two other rounds were both below his rating, but no one else was really super hot, and he was able to I read somewhere that he had missed a couple 25 footers late in the round, collected himself and like hit a 25 footer to win, you know, and that can always be kind of tough after you've missed a couple. So kudos to him for the victory. We didn't talk, Josh Anthon came in fourth. There was a four-way tie for sixth. And Sarah, you had a little bit more on what went on there. What happened there with the sixth place log jam, if you will?
Yeah, I saw a little Facebook status the other day from Nick Wood. Unfortunately, it seems like he did not total his score on his scorecard and had to take a two-stroke penalty. He said he would have taken solo fourth, but instead settled for a four-way tie for sixth, which was a $250 mistake.
Ouch.
So that's something that you'll do once and never do again, hopefully. We've all been there.
Yeah, but, have you done that before?
Yeah. I've added my scorecard wrong probably twice, two or three times over the past decade. I don't think I've just left my score off entirely, but I mean, it's easy to do in the excitement at the end of the tournament. You're looking to take your shoes off or go grab some water or whatever you need to do. And it's easy to get distracted and walk away from it and forget that tiny detail that's very important. So,
Yeah. Well, hopefully he learns from it. You know, this is his first year really on tour. So I'm sure he won't be getting caught up in the moment anymore.
Yeah.
Moving on to another event over the weekend. This is another A tier. This is the 25th annual City of Mobile Championship out in Alabama. And Cam Todd ended up winning that one, which always kind of cool to see Cam Todd winning an event. You know, he won the GBO a couple years back. Obviously, he's a world champion and everything, but he's definitely in the Masters age region now. So kind of cool to see him come into the Open division and take down some of the younger guys. He shot 1029, 1038, and 1041 to take a two-shot win over Matt Oram. Charlie Goodpasture came in third place. Josh Patton and James Cole. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Josh Patton was in fourth. James Cole, Michael Gibney tied for fifth. And another A tier with a nice payout, $1,500 for Cam Todd. And Matt Oram took home $1,100 for second place.
Yeah.
And then what did we have on the FPO side there, Sarah?
So Madison Walker played. She won by a pretty good margin.
Nine shots.
Nine shots, yep. And she, on average, shot well over her rating. She ended the three-round event with a 956, which was pretty darn good. She took home $700, so that's a great payday for an A tier in the women's field, I think.
Yeah, only 12 women in the field.
Yep. And then second place, good friend of mine, Brandi Myers from Mississippi. So tied for second with Sandy Gast, another good friend of mine from Florida. And they shot 194, took home 350 each. Haley Childs in fourth and Ashton Wade to round out fifth.
Ashton Wade with a very new PDGA number, 104.847. So younger or at least newer women's player. They were coming in fifth place. Kind of cool.
Yep. Just clicked on her name. No data available yet. So
yeah,
maybe she's someone to look out for. We'll see.
That'd be cool. And then, you know, Madison, that's got to feel good for her coming back. She battled her injury all last year with her wrist. So to come back pretty healthy early in the season, especially, you know, the early season starting out with bigger open courses, being able to survive those and come out with a win, I think is pretty big. It's got to be nice for her to start the year that way.
Yeah, that'll be a good confidence booster to start out with. So props to her.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know what, we're gonna kind of start something new on the show. The nice part with us being here on PDGA Radio is we have some nice pieces to access at our disposal. So thank you to PDGA technology manager Steve Gans. He's gonna hook us up with the hot rounds every week. So you know, 5 or 10 best rated rounds throughout PDGA events. It might be, you know, NTs and A tiers. It could be a, you know, someone who shot super hot at a C tier and we get to shout them out. So I'm excited to be able to feature this each week. We're gonna start with this week it was most of the events that we just talked about, but hottest round of the weekend went to Matt Oram out at the Mobile City Mobile Championship. He shot a 1080 rated second round. For reference, he is, I believe, 1030 rated. So that's a huge bump over his rating there. He came in second place. Chris Dickerson had the second hottest round out at the Creekside Open in North Carolina. That was a 1065 rated final round. He ended up winning that event. Third best round of the weekend was Philo Brathwaite out here in California in Huntington Beach at the West Coast Disc Golf Surf City Open. I believe it was a B tier. And that was a 1063 rated second round. He ended up also winning that one. Chris Shotwell in the sixth place tie there at the St. Patrick's Classic actually shot a 1062 rated final. And the fifth hottest round of the weekend, which we're going to end with, was Bradley Williams shooting a 1060 rated second round at the Crush on the Concho B tier. I believe he came in second at that one. Interestingly enough, all of those hot rounds were major rebounds from the prior round before. For example, Matt Orem opened up the tournament with a 999 rated first round, comes back with a 1080. The average differential in how much these guys improved their rounds was 74.6 points. So kind of a bummer that they had some rough rounds before that, but pretty impressive to rebound with those performances.
For sure. Yeah. It's always great when you start a tournament or have a really bad round and can rebound from it. You can either let it eat you up and affect your play going forward, or you can kind of take it as a motivation and shoot lights out the next round. That's what they all did, seems like. So,
yeah, definitely.
Pretty impressive.
Show some good mental fortitude.
For sure. Yeah.
Now, circling back a little bit, I mentioned the name Chris Dickerson, and I always kind of wonder if he is a player that people know as well. I guess it kind of depends on what your disc golf, atmosphere or stratosphere is. Like, he was the rookie of the year in 2015, but he doesn't get out to a lot of the bigger events. Like, he doesn't play a lot of NTs. He's not playing a ton of Pro Tour events. And so I kind of wonder if he's the kind of guy that flies under the radar a little bit, Sarah. He has won all nine events he's played this season. He's 9 for 9.
Just the fact that he's played, let's see. Yeah, just the fact that he's played that many events and we're this early into the season is impressive in itself.
Yeah, right? I mean, he's based out by you, right? He's a Tennessee guy?
Yeah, so he's in Johnson City, which is in the far northeast corner. But he is, so talking about your disc golf stratosphere, he is very well known in this area. He'll make it out to a lot of Nashville events, and I wouldn't say that he kind of flies under the radar here because he's one of the best in the state. And he has a lot of battles with the likes of Zach Melton and Logan Bowers. So in my stratosphere, he doesn't fly under the radar, but as someone from California, like you said, he may not be as familiar.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the luxury of following the pro side of the sport for a couple years now. So, I mean, I knew who he was, but I just wonder if, yeah, you know, like, especially when you bring up a name like Zach Melton, he plays more pro tour events. He's with a sponsor that is much more into amping up social media, and he amps up his social media use a little more, whereas someone like Chris Dickerson is just kind of like really understated, and he's this like 1030 plus rated player, I believe.
Yeah.
That I almost feel like on a national scale could end up surprising people when he comes out to some events later this year. So if for some reason, maybe, and I was really surprised, we're doing this director's poll on the PDGA website now every Friday after a big event, where we send out a survey to tournament, like, you know, upper tier tournament directors, pro tours, national tours, majors, as well as state coordinators. And they fill it out, and it's kind of like power rankings. They list their top 20 players. And Chris Dickerson has actually dropped a little bit in those rankings, despite the fact that he's won every week. And I think it's just because maybe he's not as well known on a national level. So I'm really curious to see what happens with him. He's signed up for the Jonesboro Open, which is a pro tour, in a couple weeks. He's playing the GBO later this year. So I'm wondering if we start to see his profile, come up a little bit more as he plays a little more high profile events.
Yeah. And just looking at some of his stats from last year, he got fifth at Pro Worlds.
Right.
He got fifth at the Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open NT, 7th at Hall of Fame. So, I mean, he was on a lead card, playing with the best of them.
Yeah, I think at Jonesboro, he was actually on some of the video footage. So if anyone's listening to this and doesn't know who he is or wants to see his game, really just he's just consistent. Like, he doesn't seem to, like, he's not one of those huge arms. He doesn't, like, jump off the screen or anything. He's just a really good, solid player. Putts really well. Yep. Nothing super flashy, just a consistent player. So I'd recommend going to look at a little Chris Dickerson. I think you're going to need to know him later this year.
I agree.
Now, speaking of which, we mentioned that Chris Dickerson was Rookie of the Year in 2015. Who else was Rookie of the Year in 2015?
I think her name was Sarah something.
It was you, wasn't it? That's right.
Yeah.
We're just having a lot of silly bantery fun today. But with Rookie of the Year, the Rookie of the Year for 2017 is actually just about to be announced. If it hasn't already been on the PDGA website. So drum roll, please. We would like to congratulate Grady Hsu on the men's side and Sandy Hendel on the women's side. They're the 2017 PDGA Rookies of the Year for last year. They will be given their awards later this year. It works a little behind because you have to wait for tournament director reports and stuff. But obviously, a really nice achievement for them. Sarah, maybe you can speak from your experience, from your rookie season, like, what does it take to end up being a Rookie of the Year? Because this isn't like a typical sports thing like in Major League Baseball where writers vote on it and stuff. So maybe give us a little more about the process.
So it's all points based. I off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you the points that are awarded, but so I believe it's 15 points to win an A tier, 5 points to win a B tier. So what I did the year that I won is it was my first year, obviously, playing pro. And as I've stated before, I have a full-time job where I stare at a computer all day. So I'm not able, I didn't have a luxury of going out and playing some of those bigger events. But it's also not in your best interest to do so unless you have a lot of confidence that you're going to place in the top 5 or 10. Because if you go out to say an NT and get 20th, you're going to get awarded 0 points. So you can go out and play a lot of B tiers and get a lot of five points awarded. You can go out to some A tiers. So for me, I think most of my points came from a few A tier wins, local wins, and just felt confident. I think there was one in particular that there was a field of maybe 8 or 9 women, and that was a huge achievement for me. It was on a huge course, Harmon Hills in Tennessee. And it was close. There was a battle, but I'm not going to lie, there were a few that I was like, okay, there's only one or two women playing. My chances of winning are a little bit higher. Sure. I wasn't planning on playing this weekend, but now that I see that I have a potential to possibly win, I'm going to sign up because it's a numbers game. It's volume and picking and choosing events based on how confident you feel that you can win. So there's definite skill involved because you have to perform well and win events or place pretty high, but you could also just play a lot of events and rack up points that way. So
yeah, and I think it just depends on the route you take. Looking at Sandy Hendel's 2017, she played 19 tournaments. She's from Canada, by the way. She comes down to the U.S. sometimes, does a lot of her events in Canada, though. But I mean, she came out to the Las Vegas Challenge earlier this year and the Memorial. She did the same thing last year. And, you know, bigger events, higher profile A tiers, she was getting in like the, you know, she came in 37th at Pro Worlds. But she came in top 10 at Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open last year. She came in 9th place. She won the CCR Open, came in 2nd place at the Brent Hambrick. So I mean, she definitely pulled in some strong performances last year. And then Grady Hsu, he's from North Carolina, younger guy. He's actually had a couple nice showings earlier this season. He was in our 8 to watch in 18 because he came out last year and he threw down a couple decent showings. Top 10 at Vibram is nothing to shake your head at. 11th at Green Mountain, he won the Kentucky State Disc Golf Championship. 12th place at USDGC. His second half of the season You know, he came out to some bigger events. He actually, I talked to him, and he said, you know, like halfway through the year, I realized I could probably do it. So I kind of made the push. Sandy, I think she knew beforehand when she was going pro that she really wanted to make the push for it. So really, I think the biggest thing that I see with the way PDGA Rookie of the Year stuff works is it's kind of a, like you said, it's a volume and a skill thing, but it's also something that you do have to like set out to attain, because you've got to play enough. And that's the biggest thing, I think, for new players, is just being able to go and find enough big events that they can feel good about playing.
Yeah. I will say something about that too. It was kind of funny. As a weekend warrior, I think about halfway through the year, I looked at the list and I was like, oh, let me just see who's in the running for this. And I was like, oh shoot, I can potentially win this.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The person that I was competing with was a friend of mine, Denise Cameron. And I saw that she had, I don't know, at that point, maybe 10 or 15 points ahead of me. And I don't know if she'll listen to this, but so every Monday after I would play an event, I had sticky notes all over my computer in my office and would track her progress against my progress and would kind of stalk her on PDGA to see what her upcoming events were. And if she was playing in an A tier, I'd look at the other players to see what her probability of winning was, that kind of stuff. And be like, oh man, I need to get another A tier in case she wins this. So I've said this before, I'm like a total nerdy numbers person, but that was very stressful. And I remember getting to the end of the year and realizing that I won, and I had never met her before, but knew who she was obviously. And she sent me this really nice message that was like, you know, looks like you got me, congratulations. And it had seemed like she was doing the same thing.
That's cool.
Tracking me as well. So I didn't feel like so much of a stalker, but
yeah. That's good to, hey, you got to motivate yourself, right?
Yeah.
Whatever you got to do. So once more, congratulations to Sandy and Grady. Always looking forward to seeing what they do. I know Sandy has more plans now to come down and hit some more big events. They're up in the Ontario area, her and her brother Martin. And so they're, you know, we'll probably see them later in the season as the tour gets up into the Northeast area. And then Grady Hsu is full-time touring. He's actually going to be at the Waco Annual Charity Open this weekend, which, man, that was a good segue. Let's talk about the Waco Annual Charity Open. Second Disc Golf Pro Tour event of the season takes place at Brazos East Park in Waco, Texas, also known as The Beast. Brazos East Beast. It works right along the Brazos River. Really cool course. I personally am super pumped for this event. I really enjoyed watching it last year. It's a big shift from the couple open courses that we have to start the year. Now we've got, it's like half open, half really tight woods, really technical parts of this course, really demanding tournament. I'm super stoked about it. It's another Pro Tour one, so you can watch it starting Thursday through Saturday. It's going to be on the Disc Golf Pro Tour's YouTube channel. I believe those go live at 4 p.m. Eastern every day. Don't 100% quote me on that, but if you want the full schedule, you go to dgpt.com. And we'll obviously be rolling out more information on it this week. But Sarah, you were looking at some of this stuff earlier today. What else should we be knowing about the Waco Annual Charity Open this week?
Well, the par, just like it says, the Beast, is a par 67. And it's 9 par 4s and 2 par 5s. So more than half of the holes are above 3s. And some of them that I was just looking at on DG Course Review and some of the footage from last year is just tight wooded, you know, 450 foot shots, par fours that just look grueling on the back half of the course. So there are 3 tees that the women will play that will be shorter, but same pars. The course is just under 8,000 feet. So and something else that I was just looking at the footage from last year is a really interesting hole. And of course, this stuff all looks different on video. I've never been to that course, but it's regular hole 6, but they played in the tournament as hole 18.
Right.
And yeah, and I watched this footage from last year, and it was James Conrad, Simon, Colling. Who am I missing?
I don't remember who was on that final round now.
I'll remember. But it's a huge risk reward shot over water.
Is it Barsby? So it might have been Barsby.
Yes, it's Barsby. Yep. Okay. Can't believe I forgot that. but it's over water. So you've got OB path all along the left side and just under 500 feet to the basket. And the basket sits on a strip of land. There's sort of a bailout area over to the right, but then there is an OB line over there as well. And during this footage, it was pretty cool because Kohling was commentating with Conrad, and Conrad was first to tee, and he just laid it up, probably 350, just right along that strip, and didn't even go over the water, and everyone else went for it, and no one went OB, which was great. But at that point, I think Conrad was very close to the lead. He and Kohling were battling it out.
Right.
But that just seems like one of those signature holes or holes that stands out to that you're wondering, what are they going to do when they step up to the tee? So.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, Eagle McMahon eagled that one last year. I think that's on one of the other round footage from that tournament. Yeah, it's a really scenic hole too, in addition to the risk reward part of it. So I like what they do there in terms of changing some of the course flow. It's something that we don't see on tour a lot, but to change the actual order of how it's played to maybe make it flow differently for spectators or viewing purposes, it's kind of, you know, amps up the drama a little bit. So
yeah,
that's always fun. A cool thing about this, it is called the Waco Annual Charity Open. The charity that it benefits is the Baylor University Autism Resource Center. So it's a great cause. They've got a cool players party at this event where they like, there's this suspension bridge in town. So just really seems like a cool event. Nice to put a different one on the map with the, you know, magnification of the Pro Tour. So I'm excited to see how it goes. What do we have on the women's side this year? I know Paige, and actually we should recap it. Last year, Jeremy Kohling and James Conrad went to a playoff. This was really one of the ones where James Conrad kind of put himself on the map early in the year, ended up having a really breakout season last year, battled Jeremy Kohling. Kohling ended up winning it. FPO, Paige Pierce won. But what else are you seeing in this in the roster this week on the FPO side?
So as always, I'm more excited for the women because I play in the FPO division. But it's interesting because the top five women range from 944 to 978. You know, the usual suspects: Paige, Sarah Hokum, Katrina Allen, Lisa Fakus, Jessica Weiss. And then there is a steep drop off to 917. And there's a few women that are kind of in that middle category. So like I've said before, I think the mini battles are really going to be fun. We see this continued battle over the beginning of the season with Lisa Fakus and Jessica Weiss. They are now within one point of each other rating wise. Sarah Hokum and Katrina Allen within one point of each other rating wise.
Wow.
You know, there's still competition for Paige. Paige doesn't, you know, she can't just walk on and expect to take the win, but she's got a pretty good lead, seven rating points above the rest of the field. But
no, 17.
Seventeen. Okay. Math. It's hard. But yeah, and then some of the other women that we've been seeing at some of the other events: Christina Gold, Tina Stonitis, Rebecca Cox, Ellen Woodboom, Stephanie Vincent, and Dez Redding.
As I say, don't sleep on Dez at all.
Yeah. No, I'm pleased. I just saw a picture posted on Facebook that she's been doing some goat yoga in her off season.
Goat yoga?
Yeah, baby goat yoga.
Like the baby goats are like around her while she's doing yoga?
In this particular picture, she's in the warrior pose and she's holding a baby goat in the palm of her hand. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see if the goats give her good luck for this event. But
I'm intrigued. We might have to get her on the show and talk about goat yoga.
I would love to learn more about that.
That would be great. We should try it sometime. All right. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to take a break. And actually, since this event is in Texas, we are going to talk to a Texas player. We're going to have a little interview with Nate Perkins. After we talk to Nate, we'll come back, do our picks, and move on with the rest of the show. So we'll be back just a moment with Nate Perkins here on PDGA Radio. Joining us now on PDGA Radio is Nate Perkins. Nate is originally from the Fort Worth area of Texas, and he's getting ready to kick off the Waco Annual Charity Open this week. Nate, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
No, of course, man. I figured you're a good person to talk to about Waco, being from the area. You know, we talked a little bit off the air. You kind of share the record at the Beast with James Conrad, which that course has just become so well revered over the years. So I want to talk about that, man. What are you looking forward to with this tournament coming up this weekend?
Well, Waco is definitely one of the staples in Texas. Brazos Park East is just a beautiful place to be this time of year. You're right on the Brazos River. The front nine is full of just pecans and huge oaks, and you know it's open, but you still have lines, and then you go back into those Texas woods, those thick Texas woods, poison ivy lined. It's refreshing to get back in those woods and to shape lines again. So that's what I'm most excited about.
What would you consider at this course? I mean, because it does kind of have two personalities. Does that come with like one or two signature holes? Like, what do you think are the one or two standout shots there?
I think definitely the original hole one. So the way that they did it last year at the Pro Tour was they started on original hole seven.
Okay.
So I'm not going to try and figure out what that would make original hole one, but original hole one is just a gorgeous tee shot. You've got a few options off the tee. It's roughly 550. It can be birdied, but I would consider it, you know, a par four. It's just a great hole to start on. You get up there and you can really lean into a drive. So, and then, you've got a hole back in the woods, hole 15, that is a pretty gnarly par five.
Wow.
Through the woods, probably 20 feet wide, 400 foot straight shot. And if you get off the fairway at all, you're really going to be in trouble. So those are the two signature holes I think of when I think of the Beast.
Now, I know you've been out on the road quite a bit. I mean, have you even had a chance to go and practice for this year's tournament yet?
I played the Beast a few times in the off season, just a kind of a money round with some friends, but we have not made it back for the serious practice. We're gonna devote the next few days to that practice. So that's kind of how it goes here on the road. You know, you kind of, you book it on Monday and then you've got, you know, a few days to work with before the tournament starts on Thursday.
Now, I kind of want to talk about a little more life on the road. I mean, you're grinding it out there. You're one of the players now. I know a lot of players are kind of converting like sprinter vans and stuff into something you can live in and travel in. You know, maybe for people who are listening to the show and don't go on tour, like, how can you describe the lifestyle and kind of the grind that you guys are doing day in, day out, week in, week out? Like, I'm sure like there's some people who think it's this like living the dream thing. And obviously you wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't, but I'm sure there's just a ton of challenges that come with it too, right?
There are some challenges, and really it depends on the person, on what challenges they face, right? Because some people are totally okay with life on the tour and totally okay with, you know, cowboy camping and just, you know, maybe sleeping in a Walmart parking lot every now and then when you're on a long road trip. And then there's others where they kind of need that comfort at home. So it does feel more like a grind. All in all, I don't think I would classify it as a grind.
Okay.
Because it is such a great life. It is just such a great, I'm just so thankful for the time period that we live in and to be able to do this and for the groundwork that was laid before us by disc golfers and the way the where the sport's at right now and allowing us to live this life. Cause it really is incredible. It's an incredible lifestyle. And I don't think I would rather be doing anything else, Steve.
That's awesome, man. I mean, yeah, I know you just came back from the Grand Canyon, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how was that? You did the whole big hike. Like, tell me about that. How was that whole experience?
Well, it is honestly one of the most rewarding experiences that I've ever had. The hike down into the canyon covers 16 miles. And the thing about the Grand Canyon hike is that you start descending. So most hikes, you know, you're hiking up the mountain and then right. you hike back down, but the canyon, you hike down into it. So you're on somewhat of a leisurely stroll headed down into this beautiful canyon. You make it down to the bottom, you see the Colorado River, and it's just incredible views. And you're like, yeah, that wasn't so bad, you know? And then it's the hike up that is the real challenge. And, you know, you're kind of working with the sun and trying to get there before, you know, before the sun goes down and you start to freeze in the desert. So you're kind of on the clock. And it is, for me, I'm physically not in that type of shape to really do that. So you're pushing yourself. I'm pushing myself to make it to the top before the sun goes down. And when you get to the top of the rim, it's just an incredible feeling washes over your body. And really we look forward to it every year now. It's just, it's on the map.
Is there anything out there that compares that you've done on tour, or maybe not compares in terms of scenery or whatever, but just something, is there anything else on tour that has that same kind of transcendent type experience for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I cross into Vermont, things definitely change. The air there is special, and the people there, it's a really special place. There are, you know, it's hard to pick and choose because there's so many beautiful places, and really it comes down to the experiences that you have there and the people that you share those experiences with. So any place can really be you know, a life-changing, rewarding experience. It just all depends on how you choose to spend your time and who you choose to spend it with. But definitely Vermont, and you know, absolutely the Pacific Northwest, with the Beaver State Fling and the San Francisco Open this year.
Yeah, that's going to be a nice little stretch there.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of who you kind of spend your time with, I notice a lot when you're not playing, you're one of those guys who's out there watching other players. I've seen you out there caddying for Paige Pierce and you know, just in general following along with other people. Are you out there kind of trying to learn? Are you out there just because you love the sport? I mean, what do you take from those extra experience where some guys maybe are, you know, hanging out, getting a little extra rest or practicing or something? You're out there kind of soaking it all in. What's the driving force behind that for you?
I think you hit the nail on the head, Steve. First and foremost, I'm a fan of the game. I love to watch. I don't know if you saw me making the cameos on the Disc Golf Pro Tour trading cards in year one, but I was just smack dab right behind the tee pad on everyone's photo because I think that it's a special time that we can be right there behind these top athletes and watch them in their prime. You know, I love to be right behind Paul McBeth when he's ripping a drive, or Ricky when he's hitting a putt, or Eagle and Simon when they're doing their crush thing. I'm a fan of the game, and absolutely I learn. I learn from all players all the time. You know, when Lisa is lining up a putt, staring down those chains, I try and get as much out of it as I can to, you know, to try and improve my own game. And I definitely learn from every round that I watch.
Did you have a favorite disc golfer, like, before you started really getting into the sport and getting out on the road?
Definitely. I was when Rick and Paul were battling at the World Championships, my dad and I were just on our feet. That was 2014
PGA, right?
Pro Worlds. Yeah, my dad and I were on our feet just rooting for Rick because I was, you know, pretty much 100% sidearm guy when I got into it. My dad, you know, had a good sidearm and taught me how to throw sidearm. And Rick was kind of known for that, you know, back in the day. And,
oh, yeah.
And so we were, you know, we were rooting for him, you know, he, and you just knew the holes that he was going to park with the sidearm, and you knew it was coming. And definitely, Wysocki was, one of my early favorite players.
I mean, well, I'm sure you've gotten to know him a little bit out there on the road and everything. Now, what's it kind of like to be, you know, getting to know him as a person a little more then?
Oh, Rick's great. Yeah. Rick is, you know, he's a kid at heart. And just, you know, obviously a world champion. But he's, you know, he's down to earth. You know, he likes to hang out. He likes to have fun. He likes to play games. Like, we don't often stay at the same place, but it happens. You know, he was with us in Vermont, and, it's great to get to hang with him. And, as far as a player, it's a little bit different now that I'm competing and I'm trying to be at that level. So it's a little less of a fan type thing. And, you know, hopefully someday more of like a competitor type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So shifting gears a little bit, you're a Texas guy. You know, everyone, when they think of Texas, they think of barbecue. I actually want to talk about some different Texas food.
Okay.
I want to talk about Torchy's Tacos.
Yeah, Torchy's.
Everyone that I hear from Texas, and even people, I got a buddy who grew up in California and lived in Texas for a while, and he says that it's amazing. What is it really that good? You got to sell me a little bit here.
Well,
let me back up a
little bit. I started going to the University of Texas at Austin in 2011, and my uncle is a full-time musician down there, and he took me under his wing when I went down there and showed me around, showed me all the good food, all the taco trucks and everything. And it truly is incredible. And when in 2011, Torchy's Tacos was two trailers, I believe. It was a little Airstream trailer, the first and original Torchy's that I went to. And, you know, the tacos were a little bit cheaper, and they were the bomb. They were incredible. You couldn't get there without there being a line, you know, down the street a little bit. And it really, really, they were special craft tacos. You know, it was a unique blend of authentic Mexican and Tex-Mex and kind of just like new wave craft tacos. And now they've, I don't even know how many brick and mortars they have now, but they have blown up. The tacos are slamming, Steve. They really are. The Baja shrimp taco is one of my favorites, and it's just a staple. So, yeah, I definitely two thumbs up on Torchy's Tacos.
All right, man. Before I let you go, I want to hit you with the lightning round. So, quick questions, quick answers. First thing that comes to your head.
All right. Yeah, sure.
First one, favorite course on tour?
Brewster Ridge, Vermont.
Okay. Most difficult course on tour?
Idlewild.
Ooh, nice. Okay. Best food on tour, since we're just talking about food?
Taco Eat Taco, Las Vegas.
Oh, interesting. All right. Your favorite sport either to watch or play besides disc golf?
To play bass fishing, to watch NFL football.
Okay. All right. Texas makes sense. Dream car when you were a kid, like what car did you just absolutely want?
Fox body Mustang.
All right. What would you be doing if you weren't a professional disc golfer out on the road?
You know, I'd probably be bass fishing.
All right. Like as a profession?
I would give it a shot. Absolutely. I fish a little bit in college. I would definitely give it a shot.
Awesome. One person, living or dead, you'd want to have dinner with?
Tom Petty.
Oh, good one. All right. Last book that you read?
Born to Run.
All right. You're trapped on a desert island. You can only watch one movie there forever. What's it going to be?
Lord of the Rings.
All right. And last one, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. All right. Nate, I appreciate it, man. That was fun. I appreciate you coming on the show, and good luck out in Texas this week. I hope you enjoy a little home cooking.
All right, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Hey, no problem. That was Nate Perkins. We'll be back here in just a minute on PDGA Radio.
And we are back on PDGA Radio. We are now going to look at the leaderboard for our picks. Steve, what have we got?
Well, I won't belabor the point too much, but let's just say I'm in the lead now.
Barely.
So, barely. No, I took a 1-point lead with our St. Patrick's Day picks. So I'm up 62-61 now. We should maybe we'll put up a link to this. So if people really want to follow it, they can go ahead and look at the actual points without us spending too much time on it. But basically, my James Proctor pick got me 12. My Jessica Weiss pick got me 9. You did pick Lisa Fagus correctly, so we each got a win in the division. It was just our opposite picks,
yep,
not giving us all the points. But either way, 62-61 after 3 weeks. I'm pumped at how close it is. I'm also pumped that I get to go first for the Waco Annual Charity Open. So here's what I'm thinking. I want to ask you this before we go further with this. Do you think it is feasible that we could go 3 like premier events without having a Paul McBeth or Ricky Wysocki win? Because that's what could happen here. Do you think it's possible?
It's definitely possible.
How possible? Like, do you feel it happening?
Well, I don't want to give you any tips or anything because you're picking first.
I am picking first, and I'm gonna give you this. I'm not gonna pick either of them.
Oh no.
I know.
That's not good for my pick.
It's not good for your pick? Oh, well, I'm going to go with Simon.
No!
Was that your pick?
That was my pick.
Yes.
It's okay.
You know what? Like, just, he performed so well at the Memorial. He seems like he's in a really good headspace. And he actually performed pretty well here last year, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
At Waco. He came in third place.
He came in third, yes.
Yeah. So, you know what? Ricky came in third, too. Either way, maybe he'll come out kind of fired up, but I'm going to take Simon, and now you got to think on your feet a little bit. So who are you going to take?
Oh, no, I got my backups written down, too.
Let's hear it.
It's Ricky. They both tied for third last year, and I think he is due for a win. The fire from earlier events this year, not winning, I think take him to the top.
Yeah,
so
no one gets more fired up between events, I don't think. I would imagine. Yeah. I would not want to be Ricky Wysocki's practice basket right now because I just feel like he's abused it for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So mostly. I like that pick. I guess we got to get top 5 locks. Let's do that in MPO before we move over to FPO. You know what? I think for top 5, this is a tough one because, like, I don't know if I feel like James Conrad is gonna do as well again. He shot he quite outperformed his rating last year, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
I'm not really feeling very confident in my top 5 lock pick. So with that said, I'm gonna go for consistency. Someone who is almost always in the top 5, regardless of course, regardless of event. So I'm gonna take Nate Sexton.
You're the worst.
Hey, we great minds. We're thinking alike this week. We had good picks.
I guess so. Okay. Well, if you're not going to take James Conrad, I am.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I like it. So, wow. We're going to have to discuss this more next week. This probably just means that Paul McBeth is going to come out and blast the field. Now that we didn't pick him, he's probably going to come out and shoot some kind of record-setting performance.
Yeah.
Which will give us something fun to talk about. So, all right, those are our picks for MPO and FPO. I mean, it's Texas, and I'm going to pick Paige Pierce. She's at the top of the field right now. She's at the top for a game. I do know, though, she has she did have some van trouble this week. Like,
I did see that, yeah.
She had a little trouble on the road, so hopefully that hasn't – I don't see something like that affecting her. She seems pretty solid. Like, when you get on the course, she's on the course.
Yeah.
So
when you're on the road like that, you have to be prepared for anything, which I'm sure after what she said, 8 years of touring, that's nothing. That's not going to trip her up at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Paige. Who you got for FPO?
I'm going Kat.
There
just,
we go.
You know, pure experience rating. She's looking good this year.
Yeah. I like it. I'm going to go for my top five. I'm going to take Sarah Hokum. I think this, the you know, we're getting into the Woods. And Sarah Hokum and Angles and Woods, it's her game. So I'm going to take her for my top five lock.
Okay. That's a good pick. I'm taking Lisa. She's been killing it this year. Her putts are on point.
And she's from Texas.
And she's from Texas,
You can't beat Texas players in Texas.
Nope.
So we will see what happens again. That's another Disc Golf Pro Tour event. It's the Waco Annual Charity Open. It takes place this Thursday through Saturday. You can follow along on their YouTube channel. And obviously, we'll have articles and things like that over at the PDGA website. All right, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to actually look at some of the PDGA demographic information that was released recently. Kind of look and see where the sport's going, how things are growing, and just take a little dip into that. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everybody. This is AJ Risley, and you're listening to the PDGA Radio Pro Tip. Today, I'm going to try to take you a little bit out of your comfort zone and tell you that it's okay to break down your form. And what I mean by that is, I'll give you an example. Back in 2013, for me personally, it was getting towards the end of my little touring season, and I felt a little squirrely off the tee. I was spraying shots left and right because my run-up on the tee was just a little too active, a little bit too jumpy. So the final tournament of my tour, I decided to slow things down and not really hop on the tee, but just a little walk up to all my tee shots, even big power shots. And that little breakdown in my form really helped. It helped me smooth everything out, and I was able to build upon that. And I've done that a couple times since then. It's been about almost 5 years, 4.5 years. And I feel like those little form breakdowns are crucial to anybody that is, you know, progressing through their game and making the next jumps up in terms of skill level. Form breakdowns are very important, so embrace it. You know, if you're struggling a little bit, it might just mean that you're progressing. You've got some growing pains. So embrace those growing pains and slow down your form a little bit and really notice everything that you're doing and use it as an opportunity to build and become a better player. All right, have a great day.
All right, we are on the home stretch of this week's episode of PDGA Radio, and we're going to take a little dip into the new demographics that were just released on the PDGA website yesterday. If you want to check all this out, there's a ton of information. You can get probably quite a bit lost here. If you just look in the announcement section, just on the right side of the front-hand page, it's 2017 PDGA and Disc Golf Demographics Published. You can go there and swim in all of this data, but the biggest things, we just wanted to point out a couple things. Sarah, what was it most that you noticed before we get into any of the nitty-gritty? I know we talked about current memberships and new members. What really stuck out to you the most?
The thing that stuck out to me the most was the percentage of current members who are registered as pro. There's 20%, which seemed like a pretty high percentage to me. Thinking about when you go to an event, the number of those players who are playing pro versus all of the amateur divisions, that did not seem very representative to me, but maybe it's just a lot of people who are registered as pro and just play locally or don't play that many events. I don't know. That was just a number that stuck out to me.
And that'll be something to kind of watch, I think, over the next few years and see if any of the proliferation of more tours has an impact on that. Do people think, oh, there's a pro tour and there's a national tour, so I'm going to give it a shot at that? It'll be interesting to watch. Biggest numbers to me, you know, 15% change in just the amount of current memberships. So we've got more than 41,000 current memberships. You and I were talking off the air a little bit that can maybe get confusing to people because they see we're in like six digits for PDGA numbers. I think we're up to 104 something now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's people over time who have a number, haven't renewed their membership. But the fact that we have 41,000 current memberships is a 15% increase over the year prior. And then 12,000 new members versus 10,774 the year before is a 12% increase. So across the board, most things are increasing. Women's growth is keeping up at the same rate as men's growth in terms of, you know, 15% or so at a time. There was just a 0.1% difference more women's players. So still ticking up, albeit very slowly, on, you know, growing the women's side of disc golf. And I'm hopeful that we can keep pushing along with that with a lot of the initiatives like the Women's Global event and symposium and everything like that. You know, I think the cool part I like to look and do here, and I'm sure, gosh, here's what I want people to do. If you want to chime in with your biggest state rivalry or state that you want to give a shout out to, you can hit us up at radio@pdga.com. We'll read a couple next week on the air. You know, because if you look in here, you can look at the numbers in terms of members, courses, and events. Texas is the biggest, which makes sense. It's the biggest state. It's got the most people. Actually, I don't know if Texas has the most population, but it's biggest in terms of, you know, size. And then you get into California and everything like that. But I think, wasn't third Michigan?
Yeah, Michigan had 195 events, 276 courses, and about 2,200 members. And yeah, something that I was, so I've played a bunch in North Carolina because I used to live in South Carolina, and they had 135 events. And that state is not very big compared to Texas or California. So that was very impressive too. But they have a lot of pockets, you know. Raleigh's a big disc golf area. Charlotte obviously
Charlotte's
is a big
huge
disc golf. Yep. So I'm not that surprised, but happy that they're getting so much representation there.
Yeah. I think the interesting part to me is like, obviously, California has a ton of courses. We have 295 courses. But you think about how large California is. We have the same number of courses as Minnesota, which Minnesota is so much smaller. And you can't even play disc golf there half the year. So
yeah.
I think with California, it's like a land use situation where just a lot of it is populated areas and there's
yeah,
a lot of red tape. But it's fun. I don't know. We could probably spend an entire show just on the demographics. We won't do that. And then obviously looking at some of the international numbers, 11% growth, almost 12% growth in events over in Europe. So that just keeps that whole scene over there just keeps growing. It's great. I love it.
Yeah. Well, one other state that I wanted to shout out to is Wisconsin. That just caught my eye. 305 courses.
Wow.
In Wisconsin. And again, can only play there for about half the year.
Yeah, but so that half of the year is probably really good with 305 courses.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's hear it. Send us your disc golf, you know, Mecca state. State the case for your favorite disc golf state. Send us an email at radio@pdga.com and we'll read a couple on the air next week. Get a little listener mail. All right, before we go this week, we got to do This Week in Disc Golf History, and we're going to take a look back into 2005 at the PDGA Professional World Championships doubles event. This was a major in Texas. We're talking a lot of Texas this week between Waco and them having the most courses. We will call this the Texas podcast. And this event was won by Kevin McCoy and Coda Hatfield in a doubles event. It was a major, but that wasn't, and no offense to Kevin McCoy and Coda Hatfield, great for them that they won. But the more interesting part was I was, you know, kind of scrolling down the list and looking at who was playing. And we talked about Des Redding earlier. She's playing at Waco this weekend. Her and Jay Redding, you know, wonderful luminaries for our sport. They played in this tournament together as a doubles team in the open division, which I thought was really cool. The year before that, Jay played with someone else. Him and Des played as like a husband and wife doubles team, which now they do like mixed doubles at Worlds and everything. But this was an actual, you know, a major back in 2005. That stuck out to me as something that I really wanted to point out as being pretty cool. that's going to do it for this week's episode of PDGA Radio. Again, if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. We're on most of the major ones now. And, you know, leave us a review. That helps people get the word out. We're still kind of, you know, grow this show up a little bit. We'll be back next week with the Waco recap and looking ahead. Well, I think we'll dive into the demographics a little deeper next week, too, because that's pretty fun. So for Sarah Lamberson, I'm Steve Hill. This has been PDGA Radio. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.